Australian Aviation Radio is proudly brought to you by Afterburner, accelerating the performance of your organisation by teaching flawless execution. Afterburner seminars are dedicated to sharpening awareness, enabling decision-making, taking action and driving accountability using proven methods developed by military fast jet pilots. Find out more and take action today. Visit afterburner.com.au.
Australian Aviation Radio with Steve Bisher.
Welcome aboard.
Well, hi everyone, and welcome to this very first edition of Australian Aviation Radio. Well, it's great to be back in the podcast studio talking about all things aviation here in our part of the world, and I've got to say it's a real privilege to be part of this iconic brand as we move forward into an exciting new phase. Well, this show is, of course, the official podcast of Australian Aviation Magazine. That's a masthead that's been around now for four decades, and one which has, of course, become synonymous with high-quality and award-winning aviation journalism. Well, in 2018, there's a raft of exciting changes happening, including an expanded online presence both via the website and, of course, through all the usual social media channels. We're talking here about more high-quality imagery, more news articles, more videos, this podcast, of course, and importantly, a revised and vastly expanded format for the print magazine itself. And naturally, along with that comes a much greater interactive experience for all of our readers, which allows you to guide us more effectively in terms of what you'd like to see and hear. We'll be talking a bit more about that, I'm sure, a little later on in the show. So where have we come from and what does the future hold? Well, I'm sure most of you who've been paying attention to the magazine lately would have noticed that we've had a change of ownership. So I think the best two people to talk to are those people that were involved in all of that. I speak, of course, of the now former editor and owner, Gerard Frawley, and he joins us along with the new owner, Christian Bacousis. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. Good to talk to you.
G'day, Steve.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining us. And what we're going to do here is just have a bit of a talk about, Gerard, your history with the magazine first up, and then Boo, of course, will talk about where things are going for the future for the magazine. So first up, Gerard, I guess congratulations on your stewardship for so many years of the magazine, and it must feel quite satisfying to have had it running all this time.
Yeah, it's been a real adventure. You know, people say it's a privilege to do stuff like this, but it certainly has been. You know, one thing that I've realised in talking to people over the last few months and about the sale and the future of the magazine is just how people are invested in it. You know, and sometimes when I'm here in my office at my desk working away, you sort of forget that the reach that the magazine has and how many people it touches. And, you know, it's really good to have, I guess, been at the helm for 12 years at Phantom Media and 25 years in total at the magazine. But it's really good, too, to know that, you know, there's a new, fresh direction for the magazine as well that looks really exciting.
And it's interesting because a lot of people wouldn't know that as you say, you've been the editor there for 12 years, but your history goes back quite some time. Are there events sort of through that 25 years that sort of stand out to you?
You know, that all fades into memory pretty quickly, or fades out of memory pretty quickly, I should say. It's funny, I kind of joke that I feel a bit institutionalised because I've been here so long, but obviously 25 years, so much has changed. I started at the magazine straight out of high school, so I was employed as a cadet journalist, and I was still 17 with a month or two to go when I started in 1992. So that feels a long time ago now. If you look at the grey hairs I have now compared to the fresh-faced kid that I was then, you can see there's been a bit of change. but I guess, you know, it's just aviation is such a dynamic, interesting field that, you know, both on the commercial side and the civil side, GA, you know, so much has changed in all that time. And it's been, you know, lots of highs and lots of lows, obviously things like ANSET collapses and 9/11 and a whole bunch of stuff like that. But lots of cool stuff has happened too in that time. It's been good fun watching it, reporting on it and analysing it.
And it's not only the aviation industry itself that's evolved. I mean, it's always at the bleeding edge of technology, isn't it? But the magazine industry itself has changed a lot.
Oh, hugely, hugely. It's been constant change. And it's, you know, I think if anything, the pace of change has picked up in the last 5 years. And from that regard, it's exciting to think where it could go. And, you know, this podcast is a great example of it, that, you know, there's so many fantastic ways of reaching your, I wouldn't say readership now, but people that are engaged by your brand. And it's exciting to really be able to open up the aperture and do a bunch of new stuff in the digital space. But, you know, when I started, we used to lay up the magazine layups by hand. You know, they'd be sent off to a place in Adelaide, I think it was, where they produced the film for the plates for the printing, and then it would go to the printer here in Canberra, and it was about a two-week, I think, lead time between sending the magazine off to the printer, actually getting the physical product. And, you know, even within the printing technology itself, that process now is 5 days. It's obviously all done digitally. We upload files using PDFs to the printer, and they get prospectus the next day, and it's printed on the weekend and out on the Monday or Tuesday. So just within the print space itself, it's been phenomenal change. But obviously there's so much more to media today than just physical print.
Well, I guess talking about change, that segues pretty nicely over to you, Christian, or Boo, as everyone would know you. Now, there's a bit of a backstory to that, isn't there?
There is, Steve. Not too many people know me as Christian Boukousas these days, apart from my immediate family. I was a fighter pilot straight out of school, and as you would know, and many of the readers would know, you don't often get to use your full name as a fighter pilot, and it's been abbreviated to Boo after many other adventurous call signs on the way, I must add.
Tell me, mate, what was your inspiration? What was the idea behind coming and buying this great magazine?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Steve, and there's no one thing, I guess, that led to the situation where we are now. I'm passionate about aviation. That's one thing I can tell you without any doubt whatsoever. And like many people who have flown fighter aircraft like myself, it's a passion that is in your DNA and in your veins from a very young age. And being fortunate to spend 11 years flying in the Royal Australian Air Force and in the Royal Air Force, flying Tornadoes as well, I was very, very lucky and fortunate. Unfortunately, I had quite a bad medical condition, a blood disorder, which ultimately caught up with me when I was around 30 years of age, and it was there I had to make a decision whether to stay in the military and make a move into VIP or into the transport world or look at doing something else. So it was at that time I set up a business in Afghanistan, providing human resources to help the rebuilding efforts over there. And I guess that was the first step into the business world. And I'm almost at that midway point now between being in the Royal Australian Air Force and a pilot and being an entrepreneur. So it's quite convenient that those two worlds come together at that nexus point. And now I have this opportunity. I continue to own and operate my other businesses, a hotel over in Perth, and a high-performance business coaching consultancy as well. So it's been an interesting journey, Steve. And one thing I'm very, very excited about is reinvigorating aviation in Australia. And the magazine gives us a platform for that. But most importantly, it's engaging young people back into this amazing sector because it's really transformational working in aviation. You learn so much about yourself as a person. You are given opportunities that no one else can experience, and you really do understand the scope of this huge planet when you're flying over it between 30 and 55,000 feet. So that's a very short answer to your question there, Steve.
No, that's great. And really, the young people is where it's at, isn't it? It's an industry that relies on it. We hear a lot about the pilot shortage, a looming pilot shortage, some call it. Some people say it's already here, and it's not only pilots, I guess, but support, trades and all that sort of stuff. We really need to engage people where they're at, and I guess this digital platform is a way forward to doing that.
It is, and it's not limited to aviation. I work and coach organisations, some of the biggest in Australia, whether it's selling food, running supermarkets, operating complex IT platforms, making baking biscuits, across business. Everywhere around the world, the speed of business is now almost incomprehensible. With the digital era, the low barriers to entry. So it means for us as Australian aviation, we really do need to look forward into this disruptive era. And that's something I'm also passionate about, flying airplanes and being as disruptive as possible to make sure that we're keeping pace with the rate of innovation.
Now, our listeners are going to want to hear a bit in a minute, I'm sure, about flying jets in the Air Force and particularly flying the Tornado. But, Jared, I want to, I may or may not have forewarned you beforehand that I've got a couple of back issues here of Australian aviation from the, let's see, what's this one here, 1997. And there's an article here that you wrote about Ansett and the farewell of the 727. Now, that was really an iconic aircraft, wasn't it? Do you remember that article? Do you remember, the 727 fondly, and I guess Ansett fondly?
I do, actually. I do remember that article reasonably well. I was lucky enough to have a flight, not the final flight, but one of the last flights, and interview the, don't ask me his name because I can't remember that, but interview the 727 fleet captain at the time. Beautiful jet, beautiful iconic jet that a lot of people will have fond memories of. I guess emblematic, the fact that it's Ansett as well, 727, very different era to aviation today.
You talk about an airline that was around a long time like Ansett was. There's another article here that you'd written in the November 96 one about the Kiwi collapse. And there was a lot of airlines that sort of came in around that era, sort of newcomers to the industry that sort of popped up, didn't they? And they just went away as quickly as...
Yeah, there's a really long laundry list of players that were here for a short time. And, you know, my, I guess, formative days joining the magazine was shortly after the collapse of the first Compass Airlines, and Compass 2 followed shortly after, 1992, if memory serves. So, yeah, they were the first of many. And, you know, obviously ANSET was a shocking event for people that were involved and worked there, and, you know, seismic change for the industry. But lots of other smaller players have come and gone, and it just shows it's a tough, tough gig. You know, only the strong survive.
There's a lot of people here. If I look down the list of people who are contributing to the magazine back in the 90s there, a lot of those people are sort of still around, are they?
They are. I think there's a really good, strong core of contributors that have been with the magazine, you know, longer than me in some cases. You know, and that's, I think that's the core strength of the magazine. It's not just, you know, who's the editor of the day, and whether that was me or Jim Thorne, who was the founding editor, and none of this would be here without, you know, his vision to set up the magazine 40, 41 years ago. But, you know, I look at the range of contributors that we've got today, and many of them are, not that awards are everything or necessarily the measure of it, but, you know, a lot of them are current or former aviation journalists of the year and quite well-respected names in the industry. But more than that, they're good people, they're good writers, and they have good experience. And I think that shows in the quality of a lot of the content that we do. That said, I mean, what's been exciting with Boo coming on board is we've got some new names and new expertise and fresh takes on things in the magazine as well. And I think that renewal is really important. I think, you know, through that 40-year history of the magazine, we've always looked to renew and refresh it every few years. But I, you know, I think this latest refresh is probably the most exciting one that we've done yet, that's for sure.
You mentioned Jim Thorne there, going back to the previous editor. I guess that's a good segue, because I read a novel he wrote once called Falklands 2, which was and so I guess we can sort of segue over to you, Boo, and talk about flying tornadoes. And you actually spent some time at the Falklands.
That's right, preventing Falklands too, Steve.
There you go. Well, you did a good job.
It worked quite well. It was a fairly interesting time. That was during the second round of the Gulf War, and they stuck all of the exchange officers down in the Falklands. So between the French, Dutch, Norwegian, German exchange pilots, we defended British sovereignty of the Falkland Islands. Now, I don't want to get into the political situation there, but we certainly fulfilled our role.
Now, tell us, you went obviously from the Hornet and transitioning over to the Tornado, which, I mean, I've actually never seen one in the flesh, but they seem to me to be a phenomenal aircraft. Was that a big transition?
Look, it was a different transition, and a funny story for me, the Tornado is probably not quite as user-friendly as the Hornet, which is always designed for Marines to fly. So one of the issues I had when I first transition to the Tornado was actually landing it, because we used to have a velocity vector on the Hornet, and wherever you put the velocity vector, the aircraft would land, would touch down, whereas in the Tornado it was more of an attitude indicator. So I was consistently on my first mission in a Tornado overshooting the threshold, and I could not figure it out. And the instructor told me to turn the HUD off, and I turned the symbology off, and I managed to land the aircraft no problem. And we'd come around, turn the HUD on, I'd miss again. So after a period of and goes, no touching, we ascertained that the HUD symbology had tripped me up. So a good sage lesson about being an experienced pilot: you need to still get in the books, and you can always learn something new. The aircraft itself, very, very different from a Hornet. I flew classic Hornets. We didn't have Supers at the time. So from a single seat environment to flying with a navigator, which was great. It halved the workload in the squadron, which was wonderful. But I guess the fundamental difference between a Tornado and the F-18 was speed. And we were in the Falkland Islands, where we could really test the true speed of these things, where we had a tanker all to ourselves just for two Tornadoes, so we could Rutowski climb and hit Mark 1.9, Mark 2, and then descend down to low level and scooch along the sea at a sort of a four-digit knots on the HUD, and then come back home. So it was quite different. It was a little bit more basic, I guess, than the Hornet. It was a lot more manual than the Hornet, but still a rewarding aircraft to fly.
Interesting, just looking at the latest article, in fact, on australianaviation.com.au, it actually talks about the latest graduate class of Hornet pilots, and significant there because we've got some female fighter pilots for the first time graduating.
We do, and it's amazing, really, because when I joined and I started flying in 94, we had Sally East was on my course. She was a Navy crossover and was effectively identified as being the first female to go through to Jets, and then Mel Broman, who was on F111s, and unfortunately neither made their way through. And it's only now with a bit of age and reflection that I realise how challenging it must have been for these women as individuals to get through this program with a very limited support network. And I think where Air Force has become very smart and they've done a fantastic job is to make sure that they create these cadres of individuals where they get a critical mass of women being able to go through the programs and the training courses together with a decent peer support network, because I certainly had a very strong peer support network but very male dominated, and I can't imagine what it must have been like for these individuals as they went through, and they should be very proud of the progress that they made. But it's a watershed moment, and I've seen some comments in the paper and various politicians who are talking down their success, which is quite incorrect. The girls would have gone through just as much as the boys, and they should be extremely proud, and I'm extremely proud of their accomplishment.
I think it's a really big step forward for our armed forces all around. So, gentlemen, the way forward for the magazine, what should we be looking forward to in 2018?
I think it's going to be quite a transformational change. I think Jared's done a remarkable job with the resourcing he's had available to him over the last few years. You'll see a very big transition into the digital space, and also within 6 months, more offering of support products and services to aviators and those who are enthused by aviation. We're including monthly columns on careers and careers management, which will be provided by Kirsty Ferguson, probably Australia's best known specialist in careers in aviation. We're also bringing Solange Cannon on board. She's a 23-year-old entrepreneur full of energy and owns her own business delivering space programs into schools, and she's going to become our new editor for space and education. Steve, we're very proud to have you on board to help us with develop our capability to deliver podcasts. We've got Mark Jessup, who's a renowned aviation photographer and quite handy on the social media front as well, who brings boundless energy to the team and our community. And finally, without any further ado, is Andrew McLaughlin, who will be focusing on the defence aviation sector and is our associate editor of the magazine itself and the editor of Australian Defence Business Review. So really excited to have a big team to take the magazine forward and really give to our readers what they want. And I guess importantly for the readers and people interested in aviation who are listening to the podcast is we're your eyes and ears. We really want to be engaged with our community, and we've got the ability to access areas where perhaps an individual can't, and we want to understand where our readers would like us to focus on. So we're very engaged with the community, we're very focused on digitization, and we're going to bring a larger portfolio of content to our readership.
That's fantastic. And Jared, you'll be staying on as well?
I'm here for the journey, mate. I wouldn't be anywhere else.
We're going to try and get Jared to his 50-year point.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. It's great to have you both on, Jared Frawley, Christian Boo Bacousis. It's really good to have you guys on. I'm looking forward to talking to you both as time goes on. It's going to be an exciting year in 2018, and thanks very much for joining us on the show.
It's been great fun, Steve.
Thanks for having us, Steve. Take care.
Well, you're listening to this very first edition of Australian Aviation Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're really glad to have you along. Well, stick around, folks. We'll be right back talking all things defence with Associate Editor Andrew McLaughlin.
Australian Aviation Radio is the official podcast of Australian Aviation Magazine. Find us online at australianaviation.com.au and be sure to check out our updated e-media kit. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter for all the latest aviation news. And be sure to check out our YouTube channel. Advertisers can take advantage of our extensive reach, encompassing print, online, video and of course within this podcast. For more information, email advertising@australianaviation.com.au.
And welcome back, folks, and welcome to you, Andrew McLaughlin.
Good to talk to you, Steve.
Good to have you back, mate, and good to be podcasting with you again. It's been a few years.
It has, yeah. It'll be about 6 or 7 years, I think, now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. So let's get right into it. Let's talk defence. Well, you know, I've often said in my other media postings that if you're going to be aircrew and you're going to be in defence, this is the era to be in it. There's so much change going on.
Absolutely. The Air Force has almost fully recapitalised its fleet in the last decade, really only the C-130Js to go, and it's a whole new whole new Air Force.
Foremost in everybody's mind, of course, when we talk about new Air Force, I mean, there's so many new airframes, as you mentioned, that's come on board. But, of course, the JSF, the F-35, that's really the one that's going to grab all the headlines. For many years, it's been a controversial project, in, you know, from it gets a lot of commentary, a lot of it negative, I think, and a lot of it from people who perhaps are not in a position of knowledge. Tell us a bit about where we're at as far as Australia stands with that.
Yeah, it has been a long time coming. It's probably approaching 5 years late now for Australia. A lot of the issues around it are programmatic rather than capability-wise. You know, you develop a multinational program such as JSF. You've got a lot of diverse interests. You've got a lot of political interference, and also the money is just on a scale never seen before. So I think it was always doomed to have issues, and that has obviously affected the air combat fleets of a lot of countries, including Australia. It meant we had to buy Super Hornets. It means Canada is now late as well. We'll talk about Canada later, I think. And a lot of the other partner nations and services in the United States have had to retain older airframes because of it. But at the end of the day, the aircraft still promises as much or more than it did in the early days. It's going to be a whole new way of doing business for Australia and for our allies.
Because it's really part of a networked system, isn't it? You know, the older ways of doing things where the aircraft would go out and sort of be a bit more of a standalone platform, the fighter aircraft. These days, the F-35 or the JSF is really part of a wider network of assets.
Absolutely. I mean, it's still going to be able to go out there and do its own thing when necessary and probably do it a lot more subtly than other aircraft have because of its low observable characteristics. But absolutely, Steve, you're right. It's going to be a much bigger force enabler for non-stealthy platforms, for platforms such as Wedgetail, P-8, the new G550s that we've got coming in, Growler. All of those platforms are going to be complementary in terms of the way they operate. And even the air warfare destroyers that the Navy's getting, and even special forces on the ground. The ability to share data amongst all those platforms in a passive way is it's eye-watering in its potential. It really will drive, I guess, the way we can operate the next 40, 50 years.
Now, I should remind folks, of course, that you've got an article on the F-35 program as it pertains to Australia and just where everything is at. That's, of course, in the January-February edition of the magazine. We recently took delivery of our third airframe, A35003, for people like me who are addicted to serial numbers. But, of course, the first two airframes have been flying for a few years now. And I think from a taxpayer standpoint and from a PR standpoint, it was great to see those airframes here in Australia in early 2017 at Avalon.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, they've been a long time coming. Those first two airframes, 001 and 002, they've been flying now for best part of 3 years, I think. They've been at Luke Air Force Base in Arizona as part of the 61st Fighter Squadron, which is a joint squadron, Australia and US Air Force, training up not just Australian but US Air Force maintainers and pilots as well. But yeah, it was awesome to have them here with our first two pilots. And the third one is in flight test now. We'll join the squadron early in the new year, and then there'll be seven more next year join the squadron. The last two of which will actually go straight into 3 Squadron and be operated under an Australian airworthiness regime rather than under the current US Air Force airworthiness regime.
Now, let's talk about integration into daily operational life, I guess, here in Australia. Of course, those people who follow the news as we're recording this would have read, of course, that 3 Squadron up at Williamtown have started that process now, haven't they, of drawing down the Hornet fleet out of that squadron and getting ready for JSF?
Yes, they have. So just last week, they basically ceased flying the Classic Hornet. And then during the week, there was a change of the previous CO handed over basically to the new CO, it's Wing Commander Darren Clare. He then flew home on Friday, and then on Saturday they stood up 3 Squadron F-35 at Luke Air Force Base, and they had a big barbecue there, I'm told, and it was very successful. So 3 Squadron is now an F-35 entity. You know, I think as Air Vice Marshal Steve Robinson said when I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, there's really only a very small cadre at the moment under 3 Squadron. The previous Classic Hornet part of the squadron has gone into a larger 77 squadron for the time being, and then they'll be drawn across, those people and other people will be drawn across to Luke Air Force Base as the new aircraft arrive and as the new pilots and maintainers are trained, and then they'll bring the first 2 jets back to Australia next December.
Oh, that'll certainly be exciting times. I'll be looking forward to the media call on that one, mate.
Yes, no, it should be great. I think that the CEO's been told an exact date and time he has to be overhead with Intown. He's not sharing that yet, but it's in the Prime Minister's diary, I'm told.
Not much pressure, hey?
No, none at all.
Now, speaking of transitions, of course, another story that's talking about our Hornets, of course, and talking about Canada, as you alluded to, there's been a story that's come up in the last couple of weeks. Well, it's actually been going on for a while, speculatively at least, about our Hornets or some of our older Hornets being sold to Canada, and it looks like that's going to go ahead.
Yeah, just a quick background on that. Canada, as you know, is an F-35 program partner and remains so. The new Trudeau Liberal government was elected, I think, in late 2014. And one of their campaign promises was that they would review the F-35 purchase because they felt not enough due diligence had been done on that. They then conducted a bit of a review. They seem to have backed down on some of that rhetoric now. In the interim, they went down the path that Australia did, Sky some Super Hornets. I think 18 they got approval from the US State Department for. But in recent months, there's been a big trade dispute between the United States and Canada, which was initiated by Boeing, which accused Canada basically of dumping the new Bombardier C-Series airliner onto the US market with the help of a lot of federal and provincial tax subsidies that Bombardier receives in Ontario. Canada has subsequently said, okay, well, if you're going to do that, we're not going to buy Super Hornets off you anymore. And they then initiated a bit of a search for something else. The timing seemed right, and also the commonality between Canadian Classic Hornets and Australian Classic Hornets. So they initiated basically a program to try and get some of Australia's Classic Hornets to bolster their fleet. They've got about 80 Classic Hornets, CF-18s they call them, and try and get some Australian Hornets just to bolster their fleet, to allow them to go a little bit longer until they can actually acquire a permanent replacement. This was confirmed by the Defence Minister last week that Canada wants 18 jets.
And I'm just reading about some of those jets and when they bring them over there, and, you know, I guess they do require some modifications. Is it going to take much to transition those aircraft straight across into Canadian service?
It shouldn't do. The jets went very similar upgrade programs in the early 2000s. Ours was the Hornet upgrade program. They've got the same radar. They've got effectively very similar cockpit colour displays, similar EW systems, similar weapons. The Canadian jets use a different EOIR pod. I think they use the AT FLIR, which is US Navy common, whereas we use the Lightning pod. From a build run, that was similar lot builds very early in the production run in the 80s, and obviously, the engines are the same, so there shouldn't be a lot of issues in commonality there. I mean, it's possible that a lot of our jets may never end up flying Canadian colours and may just be used as that maybe Christmas tree as spare parts are required. So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, I guess another airframe that's being drawn down from Australian service, if we move away from the Air Force and look at the Navy, of course, is the Seahawk Bravo. Just December 1st, in fact, that fleet was retired officially. You might say it's sad, or some might say it's sad, but it's being replaced by the Romeo, which is, not such a bad thing.
Yeah, so it's a similar replacement, obviously, very effectively the same airframe, similar but sort of enhanced engines. But the front end of the Romeo is a very different beast to the Bravo. The Bravo, although it, for its time, was quite advanced in terms of the way the multifunction displays and some of the integration of the sensors, it didn't have a dipping sonar. The FLIR was added later on and was quite bespoke for Australian Seahawks. The new Romeo obviously is effectively an F-35 in a helicopter airframe in terms of the integration of its sensors and its electronic warfare capability. It really is a special bit of kit. But, you know, the Bravo was a fantastic helicopter. We ordered 16, we retired 16, never lost an airframe. One of them's gone to the War Memorial, which is fantastic. Another one's in the Fleet Aero Museum in Albatross, which is also fantastic. I don't know what the fate of the other airframes is, unfortunately, but hopefully they'll either be, made into fire bombers or, used for spares rather than, buried like some of our other aircraft have been.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I was going to mention the firebombing. I know there's a lot of retired Blackhawks, and we see a few of them here in Australia now for the fire season, which is an interesting evolution for that airframe.
It is, yeah. Obviously, a very capable airframe, and once you strip all the military gear out of it, it's putting a lot of power out in a relatively light airframe. So, it can probably carry a lot of water, and it's got a lot of endurance, and very powerful asset for the firebombing season.
Now, Andrew, just before we wrap up, I guess more broadly, and we've been talking about changes. With the magazine and going forward, and perhaps talk to the listeners about what your role is going to be with Australian Aviation and, of course, with Australian Defence Business Review.
Yeah, well, Gerard Frawley jokingly said you can check out any the time you want, but you can never leave. And it seems to be the case for me. This is my third time back at the magazine. I had a couple of years working for a defence company in the communications and marketing role, and before that worked for the DMO at the F-35 project office on a contract there. So it's good to be back. So Australian Defence Business Review will undergo a lot of changes in the next 6 months or so. We're going to concentrate more on integration, electronic warfare, space, human factors, all sorts of things like that under a new owner, or a new publisher, John Conway, who is a former Royal Air Force F-4 and Tornado F-3 backseater. So he's been in Australia for about a decade now and worked previously for Raytheon. So he's got some great insight into, I guess, the future network battle space, and that's the direction we'll be taking the magazine. But I'll also be helping Jared Frawley out at Australian Aviation with defence stories and things like that as well.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to dragging you onto the podcast as often as we can. Mate, it's great to speak to you again.
Thanks, Dave. You too, mate.
Andrew McLaughlin there. And I should also mention that Andrew received the runner-up award this year for the Defence Story of the Year. That was at the recent Australasian Aviation Press Club Awards. They were held up there in Sydney just last month. The magazine, in fact, was really well represented across all categories in those awards this year, most notably Jordan Chong, who took out the Journalist of the Year prize. Also, our technical editor, Owen Zupp, he took out the Aviation News Story of the Year award, and Seth Jaworski took out the Aviation Photographer of the Year. So well done to everybody there. So that's everything we have for the first edition of the podcast. Thanks so much for downloading the show and having a listen. You can find us in the iTunes Store, of course, or via the website, or through your favourite podcast player. And if you're new to podcasting and you're looking for recommendations on how best to download shows, well, I always like to recommend the locally produced app Pocket Casts. That's by a mob called Shifty Jelly. They're based in Adelaide. Great guys. And it's a really easy app to use, available for free, and you can use it in iOS and the Android platform as well. Drop us an email anytime with feedback, story suggestions, and requests. All that sort of thing. The email there is media@australianaviation.com.au. An advertising space is also available within this show. A rate sheet is available for you upon request. And be sure to catch the January-February edition of the magazine. I'm sure you're going to love it. It's a brand new format. I can tell you it's rather weighty, so be prepared for that. There's tons of new features loaded into that issue. There's enough there to keep you going all summer long. I can promise you that. Well, I'm Steve Fisher. Again, it's great to be back talking aviation. Let's do it again soon, shall we? Bye for now.